The first member of our panel today, Larry Frieders from Compounder. Come on up, Larry. Larry has been a pharmacist since 1971. In 1975, he completed a master's degree in business, and in 1998, he finished a master's in philosophy with a specialty in medical ethics. He's been a staff pharmacist in a hospital, director of pharmacy and central services, and the assistant to the hospital's president. In 1983, he and his wife, Pat, also a pharmacist, and with him, opened their retail pharmacy in Aurora, Illinois. In 86, they became heavily involved in compounding sterile products for patients who needed care in their homes. They've been joined in their business by their children, Lydia and Joel. In 1998, their business began to focus exclusively on compounding, and today their pharmacy is called The Compounder, and they have a successful online presence at www.thecompounder.com. And we're going to love to hear from you, Larry. Can I stop the question? Thanks.
Hello. I've been fascinated by some of the comments that we're talking about here, and in particular, just to, before we get started with Dr. Lawrence's comment about taking a break with the naltrexone. I'm not so sure that I would agree 100% with that, primarily from the standpoint that when we're dealing with naltrexone, we're dealing with a drug that somehow has an impact on the endocrine system. And a lot of what we see when we deal with hormone systems in the body is the necessity for cyclical activities. Now, we do get the cyclical action with naltrexone by giving it once a day, and it supposedly has its impact over a short period of time. And I agree with Dr. Gluck then from the standpoint that we are building in a cycle. But at the same time, cycles happen in different sequences, and the one that comes to mind most particularly is the one with progesterone. When people are using progesterone, it's often they find themselves feeling better with the progesterone dosing, and then they keep on taking it, and they start developing symptoms that they were originally trying to get rid of. Like we find that if they take a week or 3 or 4 days off with that particular hormone, they have much better response rates. And that kind of coincides with the way people produce hormones in their body. And since we're looking closely at a mediator, a drug mediator for a hormone system in the body, it might be worthwhile to keep that on the table and not disregard it completely. That somehow cycling these things, say 5 days on and one off, seven, somehow looking at different patterns, I think we're going to see people responding on a more consistent basis than if we continue to use the drug on a daily basis over and over. So I'm not totally disagreeing, but I think it would be something that we should maintain at least up here to look at for a while. Again, like David mentioned, I'm here today with my wife, Pat. We've been married for 34 years, and we're in business together 7 days a week in our drugstore. I've been in the health business since the 60s. And the tagline on our website is really important to us nowadays. It says, too many people take too many drugs. You might get from that comment the impression that I have something against the drug companies in general. We do have a tendency to take this group of people and put them into an amorphous them, and we call them Big Pharma or them the drug makers. But we have to keep in mind that without them, we wouldn't have naltrexone today, number one. Number two, there's a huge benefit to society that we get from the social benefits from the drug companies, the employment. What would we do with all these tens of thousands of people who work for the drug companies if they all of a sudden hit our welfare rolls? So we can't just out of hand villainize a bunch of people and call them the enemy. On the other hand, all of us participate in a process by which we all seem to suggest that it's a good idea to take drugs for every treatment or every disease. And in particular comes to mind my father. He retired from work at the age of 55 and spent the next 27 years pretty much sitting in a chair. Not because he had to, because he wanted to. He played a little poker, he did very little of anything, and he had pretty bad arthritis. And he used to take medicine for his arthritis. And I convinced him once to take a walk down the driveway, down to the corner and back. And he told me how wonderful that felt. And then he did it the next day, and he felt really good. And then he took his Tylenol again and says, I'm not going to waste my time walking that block. This is a piece of mentality that's stuck in our heads. Why should I get up and walk down the street if I can just take a pill? All right? We do it ourselves. We're demanding drugs and pharmaceuticals. So again, I want to point out that I don't want to get into a position where we're going to villainize the drug companies. Even though their motivations don't always coincide with ours, they're not the bad people. They have motivations that are driven by different factors, but they aren't necessarily the evil empire. Now, to make a couple points about LDN, we have 20 formulas for naltrexone. We have capsules, we have a transdermal form, and we make a liquid form. The transdermal we first discovered effective in the treatment of a child with autism. When we tried a study a little over a year ago offering transdermal naltrexone to MS patients, the study results came back a failure. Some of my colleagues told me that it wasn't going to work, and like Orville and Wilbur Wright, I tried it anyhow. And unlike Orville and Wilbur Wright, my critics were correct by saying that it's not going to be absorbed. But we did learn something, that low-dose naltrexone doesn't work well transdermally. But we also have a case where it worked very well in high doses for a child with autism. The difference was noticeable, and it was observed within a day of using that product. So something else going on with this particular product. It's not just this quick endorphin boost that we're talking about. So again, I want to put another piece of thing up on the platform here that we need to at least keep in mind, is that there are probably other modes of administration and use for naltrexone. There have been the controversy of the liquid naltrexone over the years. Some of you will stand by the position that it has a stability of 14 days, but there have been studies that show that the stability at room temperature is about 60 days with a less than 10% loss in potency, and up to 90 days if refrigerated. And we think that the liquid form is an excellent way for people to titrate their dose or for folks who can't swallow the capsules. The only drawback that we find with the liquid dose is the taste. If you can tolerate the flavor of that awful material, the liquid is a possible opportunity. It has several benefits, and the one major drawback is just that tasty. It's just awful. We went back this past week and we looked at the past 1,700 prescriptions that we've filled for naltrexone. Of those 1,700, 52% were for 3 milligrams or less. Now, of those pieces, 82% are for 3 milligram. So in general, about half the people take a 3 milligram dose. Now, that meant that there were 48% were taking more than 3 milligram, and of those, 83% were taking a 4.5 milligram capsule. What does that say? Well, we've got 20 strengths. It's pretty clear to me that this is a fairly individualized medication. And the dose isn't specific for any specific disease state. We can't stand here today and say 3 milligram is it. It might be 3.75, as we heard a little while ago. The study in Italy was, 3.75 milligrams. Why did you choose that? It's probably very little different than 3.0 or 2.95 or 4.0. The fact that this product gets into the bloodstream very, very quickly, it does its thing by pumping out this little chunk of endorphin and then is gone, indicates to me that the absolute safety of investigating or experimenting with this product. It's the same type of response that I'm observing with this as I'm starting to identify with the use of with pepper. And it sounds kind of odd, but the drug that makes peppers hot is capsicum. And I heard on a cooking show one night about people getting pepper highs. And they're getting the same type of buzz from a pepper that they were getting when they were like the runner's high. And I think there's a lot going on with this endorphin situation that we're just kind of missing in the general medical field the way it's practiced today. If somebody can get an endorphin buzz from eating hot peppers or by snorting some pepper spray, which is now a popular product, and get the same type of good feeling that they would get from a runner's high, maybe there's something else going on that we can investigate or experiment with for folks who have autoimmune type situations. At least it's worthwhile putting on the table with my other two issues. That's enough for me right now. Thank you.